Welcome to Making Bank, the show for Bankless DAO by Bankless DAO, where each week we highlight a project and a personality from inside the Bankless DAO.
Whoa, hold on there. Each week, it's been a minute. And Bankless DAO, well, that's another story. GM friends, hi, I'm Drost. That intro isn't quite accurate anymore. First, we haven't been shipping weekly for quite some time, and have been on a pause since February of this year. Most important, Bankless DAO is undergoing both a name change and a redefinition of purpose. Helping frame and steward this set of challenges is a six-member transition council formed earlier this year. Hero Kennelly, True Cat, Winverse, Coffee Crusher, Rowan, and ZeeFi. This episode seeks to encapsulate both the origin story of our organization and get you up to speed on how the organization is changing. To help me do that, I sat down with Rowan and ZeeFi, two of the six members of the Transition Council. You'll be hearing my voice a bit at the beginning to cover some history, so I'll apologize in advance if you get tired of my voice. And now, my conversation with Rowan and ZeeFi. All right. Hi, I'm Drost, and today I'm joined by ZeeFi and Rowan. We're going to be talking about the history of Bankless DAO and its evolution and where we're at today. ZeeFi has been in the crypto space since 2013 and has been active in DAO since November 2021, when he joined Bankless DAO. His innovative problem solving and leadership in Web3 is helping shape the future of decentralized governance and strategies. Also joining us today is Rowan. Rowan first got into crypto in 2017, and he's a longtime listener of the Bankless podcast that we are not. That's actually how I got involved too. I started listening to that show, and then they launched their token, and boom, here we are 3 years later, 3 years plus later. As such, he is a Bankless DAO OG, though the first few months he was mostly lurking, as a lot of us were. He found his footing in DAO operations with Sobol, and mapping BDAO, Bankless DAO, after which he held a leadership role as the coordinator of the operations department for several seasons. He's passionate about decentralized governance and individual sovereignty. And I got into crypto first in 2021, very early in the year, and I started listening to that podcast as well and joined the DAO when they launched it and started working, and that's how I met you guys. And so today, ZeeFi and Rowan are on what is known as the Transition Council, because the organization formerly known as Bankless DAO is now actually nameless. We still refer to it as BDAO. And why is Bankless DAO nameless? Let's maybe go back to the beginning. So this episode is going to be a bit of a history lesson on what the origin of Bankless DAO was. And we're not going to spend a lot of time on this episode covering that, but just to be complete, and so this can be a self-contained show. So there is a Medium post, and we'll put a bunch of stuff in the show notes here so you can go back and look at it or follow along if you are so inclined or need some bedtime reading. And this was on May 4th of 2021, and it was announcing Bankless DAO, and it said the revolution will not be banked. And so the idea was this was an experiment. And it was an experiment in creating a decentralized community to coordinate and propagate this thing called bankless media, culture, and education. And the goal was to drive adoption and awareness of truly bankless money systems, meaning you don't have to interact with a bank. Things like Ethereum, decentralized finance, Bitcoin, and achieving this goal through collective participation in the community. They differentiate at that time bankless media versus Bankless DAO. So Bankless Media, which is Bankless LLC, that is Ryan Sean Adams and David Hoffman and their organization, their for-profit organization. So they've been very successful doing that. They have a popular newsletter and very popular podcast, and they have revenue, expenses, employees, the whole nine yards. They file a tax return. They're a U.S. entity. But in May of 2021, they were in an experimental space in crypto and Web3 stuff, whatever you want to call it, blockchain technologies. And this idea of a decentralized organization that is not controlled by any one individual or one entity could form, thrive, and survive and build something. And so it's been an experiment. And here we are. It is now, we're recording this in September of 2024. So we're over 3 years into this experiment, a little over 3.5 years. Well, an interesting thing happened on the way to the forum. There has been, we had been operating for several years, spinning up multiple projects. Probably one of the earliest ones was Bankless Academy, which was called Onboard at the time. And it's still called Bankless Academy, even though we're technically not supposed to use the Bankless name anymore. But I digress. So let's jump to a specific period in time, and that is November of 2023. And then this is about 2.5 years into this 3-year runway that was given to us through the token release schedule and so on from the initial formation of the DAO. And we had been operating independently with a number of projects that we would often go to either Gitcoin for community-funded projects or some of the protocols that were offering grants to incorporate their technologies or their platforms in our work. And a lot of our projects had been submitting proposals, grant requests individually to a variety of protocols, platforms, and so on. And you would see these things, Bankless DAO education, Bankless DAO this, Bankless DAO that. And it's like, why is Bankless DAO doing all these separate grant requests all over the place? I think what ended up happening was there was a big Arbitrum opportunity. And so we decided, we, meaning various groups within Bankless DAO, not everybody was involved, but people that were active and paying attention to that opportunity, decided to go ahead and put together an omnibus grant request for our various projects at Bankless DAO. That was about $1.5 million, if I'm not mistaken, grant request. It was a reasonable amount of real money, not just tokens or meme coins. And so that got out there and was in the Arbitrum forums and so on. And anyway, for whatever reason, whether it's people that don't like the guys in the organization, the podcast, their show, their newsletter, what they stand for, or whatever, or don't like Bankless DAO, or were genuinely confused by it because we did have a very similar name. And if you're not familiar with DAOs, what's a DAO? I've had a couple of people ask me that. But it could easily be mistaken for the same organization. I'm not going to paint anyone as a malicious actor here on that front. It's just, it became clear that the organizations needed to be named differently. Now, could it have been done a little more smoothly? Yes. I think there may have been some knee-jerk reactions by folks that had a business to protect, and I don't blame them for doing that. I do think it could have been handled differently, and hindsight is always 20/20. But so that is the history there. And so starting then November of 2023, it's almost a year ago now, we had to start looking at renaming, reevaluating, and deciding what the organization was going to A, call itself, and B, are we going to continue with the same mission? And so that kind of brings us to where we were at the beginning of 2024, because November, heading into the holidays, it was a bad time for that kind of thing to happen, because I think at the time there had been a lot of other projects that had governance tokens were imploding, if I'm not mistaken. Is that accurate? I don't want to just state opinion and call it fact.
I would say that it was definitely true for Bankless DAO. Mm-hmm. I think the DAO space was shrinking overall, just with the bear market generally. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it's a permanent downward decline trend. I think it's just like the market. It's a dip right now. We shrugged off some of the stuff that wasn't working, and now we can rebuild and refine so that we can project a successful thing into the future.
Yeah, and I do think that there was an idea of what a DAO was at the time, and it had a very specific definition. DAOs are decentralized autonomous organizations. Decentralized is easy, like anyone anywhere in the world theoretically can join one of these. They're autonomous, so a lot of their processes are defined pretty strictly by smart contracts. That's not the case for Bankless DAO. That we didn't ever employ that kind of thing. We had a strong social layer. And yeah, I think we saw, like ZFi said, there was a reduction in shrinking in the market, and we saw a corresponding shrinking in the number of people involved overall in the space, and that included people contributing to DAOs. But we also saw that some of what we thought might work in terms of the autonomous nature of DAOs also wasn't working. There was all kinds of governance sort of civil takeovers. People were losing large amounts of money because everything was automated. 51% attacks on governance, and then all of a sudden your treasury is gone because it was in a smart contract. We realized, hey, we are maybe putting too much credence into code. So I think there were a lot of contributing factors to the reduction in participation. And I think we're at a point, even within the microcosm of our community, what we consider to be a DAO, what that means going forward, and some of the concepts that we espoused initially, like emergence. I don't know if you guys remember that, but we just thought, hey, there's a bunch of people rallied around a similar cause. We're gonna see some things just magically happen because emergence. And at the time that made sense because there's lots of people, lots of ideas being shared. And for sure, some things did emerge, but it wasn't something that was long-term sustainable, I don't think. And we realized that pretty quickly.
That brings up a couple of points that I think was an issue for not just Bankless DAO, I think, but in general in this space, is how do you approve projects? And are you trying to be truly, quote, permissionless, where anybody can do anything? Well, if you have access to a treasury, there has to be some sort of control on that. So how do you fund projects in a egalitarian way, if you will? So you ended up having a grants committee. And a lot of organizations did and do. And we're not the only ones that had challenges with that. I know the three of us, when we were chatting and just planning this episode and talking about the various teams and projects, none of us wanted to be on the grants committee. And why is that? And I respect folks that were willing to do that. But yeah, I mean, trying to dole out funds for kind of an amorphous organization that's only mission is to onboard a billion people to this kind of technology with basically a volunteer organization, that's pretty broad and frankly unrealistic. I'm just looking at our notes here and the challenges in the first year. So discerning bots versus humans, and then people or bots joining our Discord just to farm airdrops or farm our token. And then the fact that we were paying everyone a flat rate in our governance token, for one thing.
It's really a whole sentence full of mistakes, yeah.
It's a whole sentence full of mistakes, yes. Thank you.
We were paying everyone in a governance token the same amount, regardless of input and skill and location. The whole thing collapsed.
Right, just when you describe it, it requires no explanation as to why that's a failed.
Yeah.
Yeah, we learned some stuff. What are you going to do, right?
Well, and I think it's important to recognize these are all attempts at coordination. So you talked about the grants committee and the role that they had. Well, we're trying to coordinate around an idea, which was presented initially by the Bankless HQ folks. HQ is in like the podcast guys, Ryan and David. So we're ideating and executing in a space that is largely undefined. Like I was saying earlier, even talking about what a DAO is, what it was and what it is now, it's changed. And we're, 2 years into even the concept of a DAO? It was a concept even before that, but I would say actually executing on the concept at scale, we're not that far in. I think to expect that we have the solutions and a functional sort of set of operational parameters for DAOs, we're just not there yet, and that's okay. We're here to figure that out. But when you were talking about Ryan and David creating this experiment, called it, that was Bankless DAO. There, I think coordination comes down to, or maybe coordination failure better, comes down to a misalignment of expectations and intents. And this pervades every aspect of interaction. And part of it is because we can only express ourselves to the extent that we can use our language and to the extent that the person that's receiving our words can understand that attempt at expression. While I may have an idea for what I'm doing in Bankless Tao that doesn't necessarily align with Zifi's or Drost's, and that's okay, as long as it isn't a disalignment or a lack of alignment that results in some kind of destruction or some destructive patterns. So when Ryan and David initiated the Tao, they had an expectation that it was an experiment and an intent to create something that may or may not contribute value to the space or to the people who are participating or to themselves, because there was an important affiliation between the brands, right? But what was, as you said, Drost, before, what was lacking was a distinction between the financial relationship and the brand relationship. And those two things being conflated created difficult times when one person or one set of people who own the brand had the perspective that the brand was being misused or improperly allocated, while the other perspective of a DAO, a decentralized community, basically said, isn't this what we were doing? Is this not a permissionless space to act based on what our expectations or our intents are? So
I think it does sound a bit contradictory, doesn't it?
It does, but at the time it didn't. It sounded like a great idea. And that's where these retrospectives are super important. And we have the opportunity to learn and build something better going forward. In my opinion, especially in terms of establishing those expectations, trying to align. We talk about alignment, incentive alignment. I think alignment of intent, alignment of values and purpose that ZFI has been working hard on in the Transition Council. I don't want to get ahead of us yet, but
sure.
I would say alignment, broadly speaking, is really important.
Absolutely. And then how can you enforce that? How do you enforce the social norms? Do you enforce the social norms? And then how do you manage? You still haven't, whether it's a legal entity or not, you still have this thing that it may not be a legal entity, but it's an entity that needs to be managed somehow. And it costs money to do those things. We have tooling that we're using. Some of us are paying for out of pocket. I know the org has, we've summarized it. I'm not getting ahead of myself again there, but paying for, he's keeping the lights on basically for no matter what minimal level our org is operating at any given time, there's certain things that have to continue operating. And frankly, everybody here is basically working on a volunteer basis right now. I don't think we've been paying out any bank for anything. We haven't been doing any grants. We haven't been doing anything, right? We've been requesting back funds from projects that are no longer operational and so on. Right. But anyway, that's getting ahead of ourselves too.
Some people are being compensated for their efforts. There are people doing a lot of heavy lifting in terms of Discord cleanup and archiving knowledge and information that was useful but is no longer useful. But I did want to, you were talking earlier, Drost, and about social norms. And I would say so those are akin to social contracts and those aren't fixed. So when we talk about enforcement, how do you, maybe enforcement isn't the right word, but how do you ensure alignment on these ideas that are sometimes not explicitly expressed in the form of social contracts? And how do you ensure that people are in alignment and moving in the same direction or at least seeing the same thing? That's super tricky. And that's where in traditional organizations, just do whatever your boss says, that you have some input on it, but maybe not a lot. But that alignment is implicit because you're not making decisions for the organization. You're a cog.
Yeah.
Whereas there's much more autonomy and sovereignty for contributors to DAOs.
I'm wondering if this is a good place to start to segue into where, how we've been trying to address some of these things. So as we moved into 2024, we've got a treasury we need to deal with, and we've got the way we were voting on things in the past was there was a snapshot vote for bank holders, right? And the only people that could put a snapshot vote, put a proposal to vote on snapshot were, I think at that time, there were just one or two people that could actually post something on snapshot. Right.
I think anyone in the multisig could put something on snapshot. Yeah.
And then all bank holders could vote on it.
Yeah.
Right. Do either of you guys remember, and I know the participation rates were pretty low on those snapshot votes, even when, especially when we had all bank holders voting on it. Do either of you remember some of the participation rates? They were pretty low, even on some of our most important votes on like seasonal funding disbursement for the whole organization.
Yeah, I think ZFI would have a pretty good perspective on that. I think it'd be important to convey it as a percentage because we had, I think at the time, we had similar turnout to what we're getting now in our polls. But at that time, active membership was much, much higher than it is now. So say, just to make the point a little bit clearer, so say ZFI's polls had a response rate of about, say, 49 on average, 49 votes.
Individuals.
With an active member base of, if you want to take the TL Bank holders as an example, it's 183 people hold TL Bank at the block height that we're talking about. That's a pretty high percentage, I would say, in terms of turnout. But if you look back towards before the issue of November 2023, we were having similar turnouts in terms of number of people, say 40 to 50 voters, but the active member base was much higher, I would say, on the order of thousands. Maybe around 1,000. I don't know. ZFI, can you comment on that? Like you're pretty active in putting polls up, especially around the season transition stuff.
I don't remember numbers, like specific numbers offhand, but there definitely was an ongoing trend downward. Mm-hmm. We were having fewer responses, both on our discourse forum posts and on the snapshot votes. I think in terms of percentage of people participating, we're seeing a way better rate with the TL Bank snapshot. Mm-hmm. I think there's something like 5,000 wallets, approximately, that hold bank token. And we were, like you said, only seeing 50, certainly fewer than 100 of those wallets participate on the snapshot votes. So as a percentage, it was very low. We saw a big disconnect from bank holders and like bank governance participation.
All right. And how many TL Bank holders did you... I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. How many TL Bank holders do we have?
I think it's 183 plus or minus anybody who's locked recently. But as far as that snapshot is concerned, we reference a block height in November of 2023.
Okay.
If you had locked TL Bank at that time, it was as if you'd signaled this long-term alignment with the organization. And we've since obviously taken the direction of focusing more on that TL Bank snapshot.
Right.
To follow the wishes and the wills of the active members.
Right. And that's the reason I bring that up. So originally, when the organization was first formed, the way we would make decisions in the organization, we would put a looser kind of conversation up on a discourse, which is forum.bankless.community. It's the product is called Discourse. And that's a loose thing where you can put up polls and comment on it. And we typically didn't get a whole lot of feedback on those either, but it's always challenging to get a lot of meaningful feedback. But that's that platform. And then when we actually would do a vote on what we were going to do with dispersing funds or electing people to the grants committee or the one of the councils or something, then that would go to a snapshot vote, which was, we could either do it shielded so you couldn't see who voted for whom, or you could do it open and see how everyone voted. And that brings up its own issues too when you don't do shielded voting. But anyway, so those are those two different mechanisms. But the point being, on snapshot, it was all bank holders could vote, and it was only the multi-sig members that could put a proposal up there. And so what we did in early 2024 is decide to change to be able to move things along faster. And also, as you had alluded to earlier, ZFI, is that how do we determine at this late stage? So in November of 2023, when the token price was down, engagement was down, there was the kerfuffle over the branding. And who's still active? Who would be most aligned with trying to make good decisions to keep the organization alive and functioning? And through a lot of conversations, it was determined what TL Bank, and we'll talk about what TL Bank is briefly here in just a second. TL Bank holders signal longer term intent with the organization because it specifically locks up a set of tokens, in this case bank tokens, because that's our governance token, locks it up for a period of either 6 months or a year. And I think you could do it either for 40,000 or 80,000 bank tokens and then lock it for either 6 months or a year. And so that would signal intent to care about the organization because you didn't have immediate access to your funds. And so what we did is create a new snapshot space just for TL Bank holders. So you had to have the TL Bank NFT, which represented either 40,000 or 80,000 bank tokens, was locked up for a period of time. So if you held that TL Bank token in your verified wallet, you could not only vote on proposals that were put up, but you could also create them. And this is a first. So previously, only the multisig, members of the Treasury multisig, could put up a proposal on Snapshot. Now, anyone who's a TL Bank holder can put a proposal up on Snapshot and have other TL Bank holders vote on it. So that was a way to simplify, and just jumping here at any point, I'm just trying to do a quick summary. That was a way to simplify it, do things faster, because again, anyone can do it, and it's a smaller number of people. And the idea is you can get things turned around faster by people that are actually involved and aligned. And so that was, I think that was step one, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, step one, it was definitely an attempt at streamlined governance because we recognized that we were dealing with a much smaller group of aligned individuals. At least we hoped that they were aligned. Using that metric of having held this TL Bank NFT at that snapshot height or that block height, that was a proxy that we use for gauging or a metric we use for alignment. And I think that it's an important distinction to make that the TL Bank snapshot doesn't carry the same governance weight or implications as the bank snapshot. That shift hasn't formally been made. We are in a period of transition, hence creating this transition council. And we're trying to streamline and facilitate governance, creating fewer barriers to get ideas going for what this community is going to be in the future. But we haven't taken that formal governance power away from the bank snapshot.
Good point of clarification. For those maybe watching on the sidelines or not really involved, they just see the token on CoinGecko or whatever and aren't really familiar with what we're doing. And there's still several hundred thousand dollars, US dollar equivalent, in the DAO treasury. And we have paused grants for projects, right? So we should probably talk about that, clarify again a little bit more on the treasury and how the treasury is affected. But then about the formation of the transition council and then some of the actions that the transition council has taken to catch everybody up. Right.
There's some overlap here. There's some good overlap too, because the multi-sig members are tasked with or are responsible for, according to the Bankless DAO constitution, like maintaining the longevity and the survivability of the organization. So it was a combination effort of the multi-sig saying, hey, we're pausing grants, and we agreed that the multi-sig and the transition council would work together for that exact same goal, for the longevity, a reboot, but for the longevity of the organization instead of dissolving it.
I think it's an important point to make because, like I was saying earlier about the governance sort of weight behind the bank snapshot hasn't been removed. We've just attempted to streamline some governance, some aspects of governance, largely the aspects that don't have financial implications or direct value implications for the token, like the bank token. We've consolidated governance to a smaller set of people in the TL Bank snapshot.
There's also a protectionary like filter step to that as well. You know, with just bank token, anybody can go out on the market, buy bank token, and affect the governance decisions. But this TL Bank snapshot is special and important and unique for those long-term decisions to be made. You can't go into the market and buy a bunch of TL Bank tokens now, one, because it's a one NFT per person vote, and two, because it's a historical snapshot or block height reference. So it protects us from that takeover.
And that was back in November as well.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah. So you can't just go out and buy TL Bank and suddenly control the treasury,
right,
and make decisions for the organization, mm-hmm, all that.
There is also the sort of foundational backdrop or security measure of the multisig. And because we don't employ any kind of smart contracts for governance, if the multisig, and it's a group of seven people who are hopefully very much aligned, both in terms of the ideas or the ideals and ethos of the DAO, but also with each other, they won't sign any transaction that could threaten the existence of the DAO, or that would act like in the contravening the purpose of the DAO. So we're very fortunate that we have never swayed too far from that. There are lots of people would argue that is a risk unto itself, and it is for sure, but it has worked to our benefit very much. I think things could have gone a lot worse if we didn't have the structure that we do. And as Zifa was saying, if the multisig say, hey, we're going to pause things for now because we're realizing that this drain on the treasury, even though it's a governance token, we're largely paying out bank, this drain is perpetuating a devaluation of the token on the market, and it's not serving anyone in the long term, especially the DAO. I would say consolidating this governance to the TL Bank snapshot, and then the two entities of the multisig and the transition council, are hugely important moves for the future of the organization.
Yeah, and they're not easy to... I remember a lot of discussion about this and really trying to be thoughtful about it and recognize the potential for damage if we weren't careful about it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, anyone looking from the outside in, it's like, wait a minute, you've turned this over to a handful of people and it's not managed via a smart contract, and their head would explode. Yeah. You can't do that. It's like, yeah, you have to, because it's... We keep... I wouldn't say forgetting, but yeah, that is all experimental. In these smart contracts, seen bad things happen.
Smart contracts are great, but people are important too.
Yes.
And we don't want to give all of our human sovereignty agency over to smart contracts.
Right.
They're great tools. We don't want them to control us.
It's like turning the nuclear launch codes over to AI. It's like, no, it's probably still a good idea to have humans.
AI doesn't care if it and its whole family gets wiped out tomorrow. We need humans with those
keys. Ender's Game.
Yeah.
Totally. And if you think about, people used to say code is law, right? And I think to some extent that will be helpful in the future. But if you look at the analogy between, say, smart contracts, if we consider them to be law to some extent, and the legal system that exists in any country, we'll say the US, I'm more familiar with the legal system in Canada because that's where I live. But people go to court to argue about law and the application of that law to specific circumstances and spend a lot of money arguing and trying to figure out how this applies and what the outcomes should be. I don't know that we're doing ourselves a service by saying code is law and anything that applies to this smart contract will be automatically executed. What if that's like livelihood? We're not saying people will go to jail, but maybe there are implications in the real world where people would go to jail because of something that's been written in a smart contract. I think that's something that this DAO never lost sight of, again, for better or worse, but there has to be that consideration, like Zifi said, of the people who are involved so that the people don't end up suffering or losing agency or their sovereignty because of something that someone wrote into a smart contract, not knowing the future implications.
Yeah, it's not cut and dried. And I think more people are acknowledging that. I think there have been a number of governance and DAO conversations lately. I know A16Z, I think it was just on September 2nd, their pod that they released that day, they were talking about DAO governance. And one of the topics they actually mentioned was that you can't necessarily have fully automated systems right now. You have to have human intervention because these are still experimental and we're not sure what the full implications will be and blah, 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 blah.
And ultimately, these are tools to help people. They're not just tools for tools' sake. We're using these new tools to help us organize ourselves better. So if we're using these tools just to use them and then we're like feeling ourselves jailed within their parameters, we've done it wrong.
Totally.
We need to use these things to help us be better us's. That's all it comes down to.
Yeah, I like the way you said that. Yeah. There are attempts at coordination, right? I would say that they're like pretty structured mechanisms of coordination for a group of people.
Yes. We should probably touch on some of the things that the Transition Council has been doing. And by the way, if anybody's listening and wants to, I know a lot of the polls are closed, but those forum discussions are still out there. We're still figuring this stuff out. And the Transition Council has been learning too. You guys have been learning, and I've been listening in on a number of those conversations. And it hasn't been easy. And I know it's been frustrating for you, especially if people aren't, you put together, especially ZFI, I know you put together a lot of structured writing and synthesizing. I know you're chuckling there, you're muted, but seriously, you put a lot of really difficult and time-consuming work, frankly, into pulling a lot of this stuff together and summarizing it and presenting it in a way that means something and can be worked with. And so I think a lot of the work that you've done has been background for conversations we've had trying to move stuff forward. And so I would encourage people, look at the TL Bank snapshot, look at how those votes went, look at these forum posts, look at these docs that ZFI has put up to summarize even the voting on those TL Bank votes. He's got back and looked at those, and you've also, there were a number of direction polls about what we should call ourselves, how we should align. So I don't know if you wanted to touch on any of that, but also, so there's that aspect of it, but then there's also the trimming of overhead. We had to really cut back on the Discord channels, figuring out what tools we were paying for. What do you want to jump into first there? Either ZFI or Rowan, do you want to jump in on that?
Just in terms of reference, I would say like the most coherent reference that anyone could start with would be ZFI's reorg timeline. That's on Notion and it should be publicly viewable. That gives a great perspective on starting, I would say, around the end of April from this year, April 2024, what decisions were made, where they were made, whether it was like on the forum discourse or if it was a snapshot, which snapshot, and how we got from there to here. And I think it'll be worthwhile, maybe ZFI, because you're familiar with this, but we could do a quick recap on some important milestones that we've reached in the process. Sure. From getting there to here.
Jump in there, yeah.
Yeah.
Like you said, the timeline's a great resource, both for tracking the progress that we've made and planning for the progress ahead. It's a multi-purpose tool. There's a lot in that database. There's a lot of ways you can sort the information. But ultimately, one, I wanted this transition to be a success, which means I need to own it. And I need to have some sort of a goal or a trajectory or a path to get the things done that we want actually done, right? Two, when this is a success, I want other DAOs and other organizations to look back at our research and look back at our records and see how it happened, what we did, what things worked, what things didn't work. And by consolidating all of these steps and processes and even like the notes that are part of tasks as part of this whole Transition Council, it's all consolidated into one database. We have a central location for everyone to access, everyone to review, and eventually for probably AI to scrape from. We're going to be using these tools at some point in the future. So The better data that we have as a foundation, the better off we're going to be for our projections as we prompt that data. And then the other thing with this, with the timeline, is that it allows us, it's hard to even describe, because what we're doing is so nebulous, because what we're trying to do is not just rebrand an organization, but rebrand collectively. It's not just six people in a group deciding this is how this everything's going to be. I have to do posts like these forum posts that reach out to the entire community to poll. How are you feeling about this? How do you feel about that? We need to crowdsource our alignment first to get the direction that we need to do. So it's a complicated process. There's a lot to it. I've never done anything like this before, but I'm really glad we have the minds to work with here that we have, because these people in these teams are some of the best people that I've worked with in my career. I want to stick around and make this work.
I think you made a good point in that you're working with what you've got, and even the outcomes of some of your polls because we have the turnout that we do, because decentralized governance is what it is right now, it doesn't reflect everyone's perspective. So we just have to, we have to go with what the people are saying who are actually taking the time to respond to these polls. And that's tricky. It's messy for sure. But I think you're doing a great job. And I just want to take an opportunity to say, anyone listening, if you need somebody to help you with information management or organization management in the context of Notion, ZFi is your guy. I will.
Thank you, sir.
That is a shameless, that is a shameless, and like, and I just, I can't imagine somebody else doing this better than ZFi has done. I love the way that the reorg timeline is laid out, and he's just a master at the diligence and just the way to display information. I'm stumbling over my words because I don't even know what he does. He just makes it work. So magic, Notion magic.
Notion magic.
Thank you. If you're on the BDAO main Notion, it's nested in the governance department.
If I could give a perspective on where we were and how far we've come, just looking at this reorg timeline and reflecting on my own experience, I think some of those huge milestones were initially like the snapshot. Do we shut things down or do we try to reorganize ourselves?
NTL Bank voters said, no, don't shut it down. Don't liquidate. Yeah. We've got too much good stuff here. Reboot.
Yeah. And that, I think that is a huge, it wasn't that, you know, that there's too much in the treasury. We can't disperse this, or, you know, the problem of dispersing the treasury and how to do that is too complicated. So let's just keep going. That, those weren't considerations for most people, I don't think. I think it was, hey, we have a really great group of people here. We are aligned in so many ways. We want very similar things. Let's figure out how to do that. We were doing it in the context of, or under the pretense of using a particular brand, and that wasn't ours, and that's okay. But we just have to figure out how we can do this and what we want to do going forward. Yeah, I think naturally we chose to reorg. We discussed how to do that, how to consolidate governance, because that was a big issue for us. Governance in a decentralized organization is slow and it's tedious, and people largely don't want to take part. So do we consolidate to a council, a small group of people to do this? And lots of people said, hey, yeah, let's do that, because working groups are, I think, probably one of the greatest things that, or I would say one of the most effective things in decentralized organizations, was creating a working group of a small number of individuals who could tackle a subject or a project and move it forward. People saw the tremendous potential in that. So yeah, we created a transition council. And from there, I would say initially a lot of administrative stuff, looking at the floor and saying, okay, we got to clean up here before we can make sense of things and start moving forward in a meaningful way. So a lot of it was cleaning up Discord. We had an initial meeting to calibrate ourselves. There's an individual in the DAO, and I won't name people just because, like, better for better or worse, this person did a lot of great work, but I don't know that they would want to be named. So I'm just going to say this person is very good at managing Discord and very fluent in, I think, its function and its use in a meaningful way. So they really cleaned it up. And that was the first, Drosy mentioned, we had halted emissions from the treasury. We had, and that, I think, was the first person who actually received payment for their contribution. They received 0.5 ETH for, I don't know how many hours they spent trying to clean up Discord, putting it into a state where we could actually say, okay, we're going to move forward. And in the Transition Council, we often talk about how there are, like, certain efforts are causally linked. We need this to happen, like A has to happen before B, but oftentimes A, B, and C, often they have to happen at the same time before we can get to D. So it's messy. And I think along with the Discord cleanup, we were able to see, use the analogy of the floor, as things were coming together, we were able to see better, okay, how do we consolidate the organization. We had departments, we had guilds, we had projects. They all had space on this Discord server. That space on the Discord server represented some form of legitimacy. So what do we want to do? How do we consolidate? How do we, I don't want to say take away that autonomy, but essentially that's what it was. We were removing some autonomy from organizational units, whether it was the operations department who was responsible for Discord and whatever DAO tooling. That had to be consolidated to the Transition Council to make the decisions and take the actions that they needed to in order to move the organization forward. The same thing happened for the marketing department. So all those decisions had to happen simultaneously, and we had to seek community input.
Yeah, and I was there for a lot of those discussions. We had the open governance calls on Mondays, and then the community jam on Fridays, and then you have your own transition council meeting on Friday afternoons. I think a lot of that stuff got discussed on Mondays or even during the community jam. We're still trying to figure this stuff out and really been trying to invite feedback people want to do. And I agree with you, and ZFi, you had said the same thing about you don't want to just throw away all that stuff that we've done, because it is proof that it existed, right? That if we did something, I mean...
Right. Even if it's not complete.
Right.
It's proof of existence.
Talk a little bit about what we have planned going forward at the Transition Council.
Yes. ZFi, did you want to mention it all or just refer to them what people have really voted, ranked the highest on going forward?
Results, I can touch on them. I don't really want to read them because they are...
Yeah, no, don't read
there. But yeah, if we can touch on them as... All right, so here's our purpose. Here's our identity. There were two separate forum discussions. The first one was about redefining our purpose and our values. And the second one was more about how we want to project ourselves in terms of branding and identity going forward. So the first one... getting a gauge on our collective alignment on purpose and values showed us that 87% of voters were here because decentralized governance was important. That was a core value for them to be in this organization. Integrity and transparency, self-determination, all these things scored like 2/3 of voters or more supported all of those things. Mm. It was a very clear expression of, you know, we're here for the autonomy. We are here for the self-sovereignty that these tools provide and that this organization provides. So that was a very strong signal. 66% said vibes, fun, and social connections were also important to them. So this is just as important as a social organization as it is a Web3 progress organization. There's a lot that can be gained by individuals, by the community at large. There's a lot of good going on here. And then as far as purpose goes, half or more voters aligned around supporting self-learning opportunities, generating revenue to keep ourselves sustainable, facilitating formal networking. We've got these great people that we work with. We've now created our own little Web3 network here. It seems like a lot of people find value in these conferences, these real life events, these opportunities to bring our people, our humanness to each other in this Web3 space, instead of just, like you'd mentioned before, almost appearing as like an invisible anonymous avatar. So yes, the people portion, the human portion is very important. Moving on to the identity and branding, it was a couple weeks in between there, but it gave us another direction, another crowdsourced variable feedback, I guess, for the Transition Council to eventually autonomously decide where we're going. We didn't intend for every single decision that the Transition Council is responsible to make to be a crowdsourced thing, but I thought it was extremely important upfront to have a crowdsourced foundation of what's the alignment we're working with, where are we all going together.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm glad you extended the time period that was open, because I remember we were talking about it and they were frustrated about not getting a lot of feedback. And so let's leave it open a little bit longer. And then you ended up getting quite a lot of feedback and more voting on it.
More feedback and more votes. And the second poll, the second set of polls, the identity and branding one, literally double the feedback. We had, I think, 25-ish people voting on the first set of purpose and values. But when the branding and identity came around, it was 50 votes. We saw a doubling of participation. And because the way the votes are set up on Discourse here, we can see who voted. And these are people that have been around. These are contributors. These aren't randos. This isn't a Sybil attack. Right. There are even OGs that came back to vote on this that we haven't seen or heard from in a minute. So it's good. It seems like good momentum. It seems like good direction. And I'm really pleased with the level of interaction these polls have had.
Yeah, that's great. And I had seen people coming back in community call too lately. The numbers have been higher too. Because for a while there, we'd have maybe 5 or 6 people. And then I know a few weeks ago, we had like 25 again, 25, 30. There's just something I want to touch on that I think sometimes gets lost, because even before this occurred, and you talk about cleaning up Discord, at one point we'd had so many Discord channels and so many active projects and so many active conversations. You'd go into the Discord and you'd see 8 different meetings going on at once with 10 people in each one. It was crazy. We were hitting at our limits on Discord. And so we ended up telling projects to go and set up their own Discord server. Get the hell out of here. You're taking up too much space. I remember right after that happened, it seemed like there was nothing going on. And it's not that there was nothing going on. It's just that it wasn't all in our one Discord server where you saw all the activity. And I think that kind of affected me as a mental momentum, because it's like, oh, wow, nobody's doing anything. Nothing's going on. And that just absolutely was not the case. Data behind this saying, oh, there were X number of people active on these multiple Discord servers that used to be the one BDAO server. That having a gathering spot, I think, was valuable, and it showed energy and momentum. But let's see, getting back to the topic here.
So that your perspective is valuable, because chances are if you have that perspective, other people do as well, right? It may not be a lot of people, I don't know, but very unlikely that you're going to be alone in the perspective that you have, oh, nothing's going on. And thinking from a retrospective, anyone who is paying attention to brand and representation of the organization in a coherent manner externally, especially, should have started to get a little bit concerned as these org units, whether they were projects, mostly projects, created their own Discord servers. But all of a sudden, you didn't really know what was going on. You couldn't, unless you took the initiative to go and join that Discord server and were part of that group, you didn't really know what was going on. So that's, I think, that should have been our first red flag, or at least beige flag.
One of them.
Yeah. How do we present ourselves in a coherent manner? Does that matter? Right? And is this going to come back and bite us in the future? And it did, right? And I think we, going forward, with all these efforts that ZFi is putting in around setting this foundational alignment, and they're not going to be all the questions, right? But ZFi has come up with some really great temp checks or litmus tests or proxies for alignment around decentralized governance and so on. We know why we're all here now. It's been recorded. And from here, we have a foundation, I think, to start building.
Up only.
Up only.
Yeah, I don't know that we'll ever regain the energy we had at launch, because it was just an interesting confluence of things at once.
I don't think we can. I don't think we should.
Nor should we, yeah.
It was chaos. Great chaos, but it was chaos. And without the sort of the parameters to ensure that alignment around intent and direction, that isn't a good thing for an organization. Chaos is, the energy was awesome. It was, everybody was on dopamine highs, and
you can't sustain that.
No, it was great.
It was. Sure,
but it is not sustainable.
Yeah. And it was at a time when I think we were still homebound, right? So we've had more engagement in redefining and rebuilding the organization. People are still active. They're not necessarily that active. Where we're at now, we've had a number of episodes talked about the projects people have worked on over the last few years, and they morphed into new things. Everyone I've talked to has learned a new set of skills whether it's a learning coding or like you, Z-Fi, learning all this audiovisual production stuff. I thought that you had that as background because you're really good at it. And man, you've got a great voice for the pod.
I'm going to take the voice. That one's me. But everything else was Bankless style.
But yeah, that is one of the reasons we came here. It's to learn new stuff, maybe find a different way of working. And it's hard to create something new without referencing what you're already familiar with. And so we do take things from our prior life experience. We've been trying to figure out this human experiment for thousands of years. There have been contracts since before paper. I was at a archaeological site in eastern Turkey, Çatal Hayuk, I think is how you pronounce it. And those excavations go back to 6,000 BC. And they found contracts on stone tablets, agreements between people from 6,000 BC, just to make sure we've got it in writing. Anyway, I don't know if that's a good summary or not, but we're still evolving on this and iterating on this human experiment and this Web3 blockchain experiment. And what are the kinds of things that will enable? I don't think any of us have any clear answers at this point. I listen to experts in the field and read a lot of stuff. And these are common problems, right? And that's one of the things we'll be talking about in another episode. The goal here is to find out what have we learned that's maybe common to decentralized organizations in some of these virtual spaces. And I don't know what's going to come out of it. I'm hoping we can get some answers or at least maybe remember some of the things we tried to do that maybe didn't turn out so well. And we iterate and try differently going forward, right? And that's part of what you're doing, Z-Fi, is documenting where we've been. Because I just think about, I think I mentioned this before, 1984, the memory hole. As if things never happened, right? This three-year experiment, if we just kill the multi-sig, token disappears, Notion's gone, no Discord, no YouTube, none of the content we created spending hundreds of hours on exists anymore. And granted, some of it may not be timely or relevant anymore, but it's still nice to be able to go back and refer to a body of work. And I think you were also saying that you've got that data set, and maybe we can use some AI to pull relevant information out. I'm not saying necessarily for our archive. I don't know.
I think there is tremendous benefit in keeping that information and that knowledge because our biological brains aren't built in the same way to retain information the same way that the extensions of our biological brains are. And by those computers or whether it's a database or a hard drive or whatever, however the information and the knowledge is stored, we're more present focused. We learn what we can from the past and we carry it with us into the future to the extent that we can, but we're not perfect. Our memories can be clouded. Our memories can be supplanted. They are subject to interpretation based on our future experiences. I think it's hugely important to retain this stuff and have a tool like AI, like you say, as objectively as possible, pull things from it so that we can keep those things in our minds going forward.
There are success stories buried in this body of work, and AI can help us pull them out later. Yeah. Just like your archaeological dig, we're going to look back, maybe not 6,000 years, but we're going to look back and go, oh yeah, they were working on stuff. You know, they started to build this back in the day, and we'll have proof of it.
Totally. And Joe, you were saying this human experiment coordination has been ongoing for thousands of years, and we have more and more refined tool sets, technology that we can rely on to facilitate and empower those attempts at coordination. It's up only. I see going forward, we have the tools and the desire to move away from attempts at coordination that disempower people. It removes their agency. You know, if we work for a traditional organization, we don't have the agency or the autonomy that we do in these decentralized organizations. And if we can continue to iterate on this, going forward without compromising or losing the integrity of the individual and of the organization in the context of that autonomy and that agency, we're winning. These are all wins.
And this space offers us the advantage of speed. Yeah. The blockchain and the internet give us this playground at light speed with which to iterate and experiment and hone our human coordination efforts. We've been doing it for thousands of years, but we now have a tool that can do thousands of years of coordination in three.
Yeah.
It's only a matter of time before we get ahead of ourselves and like we're discovering and shaping meaningful new human organization systems with these tools. We're almost there.
Right. And, you know, the AI promise, to me, it's to help surface things. And even, Zifa, you and I were talking the other day, it's even if you're just trying to prompt an AI to help you write it, sometimes it's more work to create the prompt than it is just to write the damn thing that you're trying to put together to get what you want. And so, yeah, these are great tools, but you still have to know how to use them. We're still humans with limited capacities and foibles and failings and human emotions and neurotransmitters that aren't balanced all the time.
Yeah, limitations aren't barriers as long as we recognize them and adapt for them, right?
That's right. All right, guys. I think this has been a great conversation. I know we're having more of them. And Zifa, you might be involved in one of these other convos. Rowan, you're certainly welcome to jump in too. And we'll just see how things go forward. You guys being on the Transition Council has been super helpful. I know it's been encouraging since you've been getting more feedback. I know it was hard at the beginning. And, you know, when you're trying to make decisions among a group of six people or put the right kinds of questions out to the broader community to get the right kind of feedback, it's not an easy task. And I wouldn't say it's thankless, but it's not as rewarding, at least in the early stages, as one would like. So hopefully all the work that you're doing will really pay off. I know I appreciate it. And as we've seen people come back, I know they appreciate it too. And a part of the purpose of why I'm doing this is to just make it accessible to more people in different ways, because not everybody wants to read through all those reams of documents and listen to hours and hours of meetings discussing it.
Yeah, thanks, Drost. I think these are valuable exercises, and we put a lens on it inherently, but that's part of the learning experience. So I think your contribution is as much as the value that Zifa and I bring to the organization being on the Transition Council. I think these efforts, your efforts, are they carry tremendous value as well.
Thanks. And just to mention the other folks on the Transition Council as well. I'm sorry, go ahead, Zifa.
Just wanted to plus one that. You are focusing on the people, the human aspect of this organization, and I think there's great value in that.
Thank you for that. I appreciate it. I enjoy dealing with people. More so than the technology, quite frankly. You gentlemen are both on the Transition Council, but what I failed to mention is that I mentioned there were six people on it, but the others on the Transition Council are Hiro Canelli, TrueCat, Windverse, and Coffee Crusher. Yes. And you all have been showing up and contributing and discussing, and I just really appreciate it. So thank you all for your ongoing contributions. And for anyone listening, take a look at the show notes, hop into forum, hop into the community call, listen to those governance chats on Monday if you're so inclined. And we also record those things. So we're doing our best in these strange times.
Well, thanks.
All right, guys, have a great rest of your day, and we will catch up soon. And thanks again for joining. Well, friends, thanks very much for listening. We hope you enjoyed the episode and that it did what we set out to do, encapsulate some history and get you up to speed on where we're at today. And thanks again to everyone on the Transition Council. Coffee Crusher, Hiro Canelli, TrueCat, Windverse, and of course, Rowan and ZFi. It would be a lot harder to navigate this without their dedication. And thank you, listener. If you're a member of BDAO and have been participating in the polls and discussions, know that you've helped shape our future. And of course, we're just getting started on this reboot. So if you've been away for a while or find new inspiration, we'd love to hear from you. Take care, friends.